Hello, hello, hello. My name is Cameron Skinner. I'm the general manager on the Visual Studio Ultimate team. Some say that means I'm the ultimate GM manager.
That joke never gets old. Yeah.
My team's sitting there going, yeah, it does get old. We are going to show you a ton of stuff today in the Visual Studio VNext, our ALM offerings in particular. We got a ton of stuff, and I'm hoping that we have some time at the end to take questions and answers. We've got mics set up here, but we may be a little constrained, but we're gonna do our darndest to try to get through it all. Here to my right is Mr. Brian Keller. Yeah, let's give him a round of applause. That's probably fine. He'll be helping me out on all the demos and so on. You can go to the next slide here. So I'm going to show you one, two, maybe three slides total, and then the rest of the time is in the product. I hope that doesn't disappoint anybody. ALM, Application Lifecycle Management. Microsoft's been in this business for a long time. 2005, we had our first serious offering in this space. And from that time till now, and for the foreseeable future, collaboration is a key piece of what it is that our tooling is enabling. We care deeply about how your team members are sharing data, how they're communicating with each other, how they're getting their jobs done together. It's a key cornerstone and a key design principle that we've got going throughout this. One of the things that makes that important is what we call this actionable feedback concept. And the actionable feedback is, if I've got some data that's originating over here, let's say on the test side of the house, and that data flows through the system, Team Foundation server on the back end, for instance, and then a dev picking up that defect or that bug can actually do something quickly without a lot of ping-ponging, that's actionable. You saw in the keynote today that Jason started talking about actionable incidents from production. We're going to show you that here in a second, but that's another instance of actionable feedback and actionable data, essentially. And then, of course, we've got this concept of respect your working styles. And basically, this is things from designers working in the system, testers, developers, folks working in Eclipse with our Team Explorer Everywhere product, all these sorts of ways. We basically want to have fit-for-purpose experiences for you to get the most out of the system. And of course, transparency is key to everything that we're doing inside Visual Studio and Team Foundation Server. We really believe that it's the key to project health. If you understand where your system is at any one point in time, you're able to actually adjust and make the proper changes to your, be it your process, code, schedule, what have you. Transparency is key, and being able to do that in an agile manner is essential. Okay? So this slide here, Jason showed this in the keynote, and we spent a lot of time kind of going around this. And we do refer to this kind of like the virtuous cycle. This is, you've got the develop, and it goes around, it gets into production, and we do the sprint execution, and it just keeps going, right? And our ALM offering is all about making that as seamless as possible and keeping it going. It never stops, okay? And so what we're going to do is we're going to start our conversation today by kind of picking up where Jason left off. As far as the incident coming from production, right? And what we showed you in the keynote was a SCOM to TFS connector. And at the heart of that was the Avicode technologies that we recently acquired. And that's a fantastic technology because it really gives you the quick ability to understand, hey, is this a configuration problem or is it an app dev problem, right? And there's a number of issues that could save and save you time and get you back up and get your mean time to resolution, just nail your SLA, et cetera, et cetera. But there are going to be times when you don't have the enough information. And that's when you're going to reach for something that we call IntelliTrace in production. Anyone heard of IntelliTrace? Yeah, you can applaud whenever you want to, by the way. IntelliTrace in production. Let me just give you a quick preamble on what this is. It's our historical debugging feature. Think of it as like a VCR for debugging information. And in vNext, we're going to make that available for production servers. And in fact, We're going to make the collectors behind the IntelliTrace feature actually widely and freely available. You can distribute those freely, get those collectors wherever you need to get them, in production, pre-production, wherever you need to be, and then analyze the results of that production in Visual Studio Ultimate. Okay? And so with that, I'd love to just kind of show you what that looks like. What do you think, Brian?
That sounds great. So over here I have an application that we were showing you in the keynote, and as you saw, Jason found a bug for us, which we don't want that to happen. But the reality is that let's assume this is running in our production environment. How are we going to get the diagnostics that we need? And you saw some great ways that Victor used some tools to get that AVI code information back into Visual Studio, but sometimes that's not enough. So when we want to really crank this thing up to 11 and get everything that will help us really go back and forth through the call stack, that's what IntelliTrace is for. So until now, you haven't really been able to use IntelliTrace in production. What we'll be doing in the next release is making sure that you can do just that. So what I have here, what I have somewhere, is a cab file. So I've expanded this cab file. That means you can put it on a USB key and take it over to the server that you need to collect IntelliTrace information from, or you can take advantage of remote PowerShell, do this from your desk, and enable IntelliTrace on the production server sitting in your data center. So what I'll do here is I'll just go ahead and import my module here.
Looks like you're making heavy use of the PowerShell there.
Absolutely. I love PowerShell.
Anyone using PowerShell? Quite a few. Okay.
So I can just list all my commands on here, and so you can see that what I can do is start this IntelliTrace collection, and we can actually bind that against your application pool. So I have an app pool here, so we'll start IntelliTrace against Fabricam Fiber. And we'll give it the log file directory we want to spit that into. The other thing I have to pass it is my collection plan. So if you've used IntelliTrace, you know that you can have the option of just collecting event information, or you can really crank that thing up to capture even your variables that are being passed in and out of methods. So we want to capture all the information we can here. So I'm going to put this onto a trace setting. And now this is going to capture all of the information against that particular application pool. So I'll restart my application. What it's doing is it's actually reauthoring the MSIL behind the scenes for me, so we're getting all that trace information collected right into these files. And you'll see that this file is starting to spin up with some information. You do pay a perf hit the first time you hit this, just because we are rewriting all that MSIL. But momentarily, I'll be able to start interacting with the application and then reproduce the issue. So I think this is the repro. I think this is the information that I need. Now I have a couple of options at this point. I could either stop collection altogether, or I can just checkpoint from here, grab a file that represents everything we've done to date, and then keep the IntelliTrace running after that. So let's do that. We'll go ahead and checkpoint the IntelliTrace.
So this is essentially taking a snapshot of the file that's being collected at this point.
Exactly. And now if I look at my log directory, there's my second file. Double-click to open that in Visual Studio Ultimate. So if you've used IntelliTrace, this should look familiar. There's all my threads up at the top. There's a few things that we're starting to add in the next release. So you can see here that we're actually getting the web request time. So that's really nice. Previously, you would have only gotten that with web performance tests or load tests. We're starting to bring in more of that information, just so you have everything at your fingertips to start understanding and diagnosing this issue. The other thing you'll notice down here is that we have a few null reference exceptions. So I'm going to drill into that. We'll start debugging this issue. And then you'll see all my IntelliTrace events over on the right-hand side.
So just to set the stage here, who has used IntelliTrace before? Just a few, yeah. The folks that have used it, hey, woo! Here's the thing. We're not running this app right now, right? We've got this IntelliTrace log, this iTrace file that we've pulled in, and it looks, Visual Studio, it looks as if it is debugging. This is why we call this an historical debugger. The app actually isn't running, but Visual Studio looks like you're debugging that app as if it was.
Exactly. It's like a VCR for your code. And for those of you that are too young to know what a VCR is, you can ask your neighbor. So here you see all of my ASP.NET Git events, so that's really cool. Another thing that I can get here is ADO.NET. So this is actually giving me my entire statement that's going up to SQL Server, so that's nice to have. But the root cause I'm looking for is actually these exceptions that are being thrown and caught. So one of the nice things about ASP.NET and WPF and some of these other frameworks is they catch a lot of exceptions for you behind the scenes so that your users can keep running the app and it doesn't blow up on them. But the problem, of course, is that we never get the information to say, hey, this is exactly where the problem occurred. With IntelliTrace, we can go back in time and we can see exactly what happened there. So you can see here that by clicking on this, it actually took me straight to the method of code that was executing. And I just need to come in here and do something like, you know, if this is set to null. Then we'll say that should be set to unassigned. And if not, then that's set to some value. Okay, so that's our fix.
That's great. That's great, Brian. So that's IntelliTrace in production. And the collector piece, the part that Brian showed you is the PowerShell side of that. That collector side of IntelliTrace is freely distributable. We want to get that everywhere so you can start to use that in your applications and gather that information when you need to, right? And then pull it back into Visual Studio, that iTrace file, take a snapshot of that thing, and pull it back into Visual Studio and debug just like you saw that Brian just showed you. Okay, great. Now, let's switch gears a little bit and get back to the top of the cycle here where we are dealing with your product backlog. Okay? Who all's, just show of hands, anybody doing Scrum in the room? Scrum. Excellent. XP. Any other agile process? What was that?
Kanban.
Kanban. Good, good. Okay, that's perfect. And everyone else is doing Waterfall? That's fine. It's totally fine. The systems will help you with that as well. And it will help you with it in an agile way. Okay, so what we've got here is, I showed you this on stage. We've got a new dashboard for Team Foundation Server that we're pretty excited about, actually. You've got the ability to get in here. The web access portal to Team Foundation Server has always been very rich, and we're just extending it and making it just that much more rich to help you with many of these tasks, that some of which you saw me do on the keynote, and we're going to drill into a little bit of it now. But we're going to get in there and show you how to manipulate your backlog, how to understand capacity of your team better, how to break down and decompose your stories, and show you a few more details than we weren't able to show in the keynote because we're constrained for time. Let's do that now, Brian.
Okay, sounds good. So let's jump straight into that storyboarding tool. We quickly showed how Cameron was able to mock up a user interface, show it to Jason, and get some feedback. We didn't have a lot of time to go into some of the additional tools that the storyboarding assistant will show you. Now, I want to stress that everything you see here in terms of a mock-up for our existing website, we created it in about 15 minutes. So we want to make it really easy for you to just throw these things together. You can see that I've modeled some custom animations here, so we can show how you would work through this this application, create new records, go from tab to tab. So it's really quick. It's easy to have a conversation. Yeah. You can throw this up on a projector, or you can email this to somebody. Everyone's got PowerPoint, right? So it's really easy to work with this stuff. Another thing that you can do is you can come in here and you can start taking advantage of custom shapes. So earlier, Cameron gave me some custom shapes. So I can just import these. And he gave me some rating controls. So we want to make it really easy for you to create these custom shapes and share those with the rest of your team. Another thing I might want to do is create my own custom shapes. So that's easy enough. We can just take these guys and say add shape. And what's a label box? A label plus a text box. That would be a label box, right?
Sounds good.
All right. So we'll now take this label box and drag it out. And then we can just edit that. So you'll notice these are all rich controls. I've got a really rich control library over here. And we're going to continue to expand this over time so that you have the controls that represent the types of applications you're building. The one other thing I'll show you in here is that we have multiple layouts. So we're taking advantage of master pages. So if I create a new layout here, I can say, actually, that's not my default Fabricam site. This is actually a SharePoint site. And so I can come in here and edit the URL and say this is fabricam.com. So lots of really nice stuff in here. I can also do things like take screenshots. So if you have an existing website you want to grab the masthead from, grab that screenshot, put it on all of your existing layouts. It makes it really easy to work with that stuff.
That's great. One other thing I would like to point out, though, is that in the shape library, you can imagine you're going to get a lot of shapes. And so we've given you the ability, we've got a lot of shapes and with a lot of tags associated with them. So you saw me in the keynote type map. and we hit a number of map icons. You just type phone or something like that, you'll get phone icons and backgrounds and things of that nature. So it's really designed to support you and as you build up these templates.
Absolutely.
Yeah, this is a cool one. Great. Okay, so you know what? Now let's show the dashboard. This is the dashboard that I was alluding to earlier, which you jumped into the storyboard, which is perfect. This is the TFS dashboard that I was talking about earlier, and this is where you saw me jump into this and get into the backlog work and the task boards. So now let's drill into this, because this is really exciting.
Absolutely. So those of you that use Team Foundation Server today, you know that we already have a web access portal that gives the other stakeholders on your teams who may not have Visual Studio a really easy way to interact with the rest of the team. So I can jump in and check out my work items, for example. I can even look at source control, and I can see that there have been some check-ins over here. We can even check out builds. We can even queue a new build from the web interface. But what I want to show you here is just a double-click drill down into some of the areas to support Agile development that we've added in this release. So if we look at our backlog here, we want to make it really easy for you to quickly manage this and add new items. So I can come down here and say, customer needs to know when tech arrives. I just press enter. I'm ready to start something else. So need to build something cool, and so on and so forth, right? And then as I get these in here, it makes it really easy to actually drag and drop these around. Those of you that use TFS today, if you want to move something around, you have to change it, this value to a 1 and this value to a 5, and it gets kind of messy. But we want to make it really easy for you to quickly manage that backlog and take the input from your customer into account as you're reprioritizing what you're going to build.
Not that we want you to constantly be resetting your sprints, as a gentleman over here pointed out. This is one of these things where you want to do commits to your sprints, and you want to see that sprint all the way through, and then start manipulating your priority. But it does happen, and the tools can adjust at those sprint boundaries, and they can do it during the sprint as well. But hopefully you're not doing that too much.
Absolutely. And so the next thing I can do is I can start assigning these to sprints. So I can say this is work we're going to do in a future sprint. Just drag it over there. You'll notice on the right-hand side that it's now assigned that to a sprint. Up here I have my velocity chart. So this is pulling in data from historical iterations. So this shows what I was able to deliver in past iterations. And then 41 is the number of story points that I've committed to for this particular iteration.
And this is all real time. So it's not waiting, it's not pulling from the TFS data warehouse. This is running on the data as it's changing.
That's right. So if we go back to our scenario where Jason asked you to deliver this yesterday,
yep,
we need to add this to an existing sprint. So this is a mid-flight sprint we'll add it to. Of course, we need to break into this sprint, decompose this work, and understand exactly what it's going to consist of. So I'll just go ahead and break this down into a couple of tasks. And we want to make sure Lori takes a look at this as well.
Great.
Oops. And now, of course, I've overburdened my team, so we want to make sure that we take some of that work off, and we can scroll down and find this other story that hasn't yet started, drag and drop. And then, of course, everything is updating in real time here, which is really nice.
Now, you saw that's one way of doing it. Now, another way of doing it is we can actually go manipulate capacity if folks need to take a vacation or what have you, and we didn't show you this yet.
That's right. So I can drop into capacity here, and I know Cameron's been working really hard with his keynote, so we want to make sure we give him a couple days off, and I just type 2 in there, and it automatically updates. So you can quickly come in here. I'm not committing anything. I'm just quickly making those changes, and you can see he's taking a lot of time off. So we'll go ahead and give you a couple days.
Yeah, thanks for that.
Yeah. And so now that we've got the sprint the way we want it, we now want to switch over to our task board.
Yes.
Show you a couple of cool things there that we didn't show you in the keynote. So, of course, we have the ability to take this work and drag this over. One of the things we can do is now collapse that story now that we're done with that particular story. We know that Lori's going to work on this now. And I need to fix my server clock. Bear with me. Let's say it's tomorrow. There we go.
Great.
The other thing we support is workflow rules. So as I come down here, if I move Diana's work accidentally over into this column and say, actually, wait a minute, we need to move that back. Well, because we've already zeroed out the effort associated with that, it's now giving us a validation error, which is correct. That's what we've told Team Foundation Server to respect. So what we can do is just drop back into there and say, actually, you know what, we still have 1 hour remaining. The other really cool thing that that we've done is we've created a nice way for you to do your stand-ups. So let's say that Cameron and I are having our stand-ups, and Cameron now wants to say, here's what I did yesterday, here's what I'm working on today. You can now pivot onto Cameron, and now you can see all the work that's highlighted, that's currently assigned to him, stuff he did yesterday, stuff he's working on today. So I can switch over to me, and then I'll change as well. The other thing is, since you're going on vacation, I want to take some of the work off of your plate.
Please
so,
do.
So I can just drag some of that work onto my plate, and if you notice there, it automatically updated the assignment. So that's now assigned to me. You
Excellent.
Can go on vacation.
You might want to pull a couple more of those. That'd be fine.
Sounds
that's
good.
Great.
All right.
So the idea here, right, is just make the tooling seamless. Don't spend any time, you know, updating these individual numbers, et cetera. Let the tool help you with that whenever it can. Give you a real, just clean experience. And this is all in the web. So, you know, if you've got a geographically dispersed team, they're all looking at the same data because they're all pointing at that Team Foundation server. Okay.
The other thing to point out is we are using the Scrum process template here, but this will work with any process template that you use. So we want to definitely respect that. If you're using MSF Agile, MSF CMMI, some third party or custom process template, all these tools will just work.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So what we've got here is you've got all this rich capability to manage those priority backlog items. You can break it down, add the tasks that make up those stories, start assigning those to your individual members, and start dealing with capacity and things of this nature. But at this point, we want to go into the actual dev experience of where the sprint executions start to happen right here in the virtuous cycle. And there's a number of new capabilities that we have in Visual Studio, vNext, that we want to show you today. Some of which we showed you in the keynote, and we're going to show you a little bit of that again here. But then we're going to get into a number of other items. Let's do that now, Brian.
Okay.
Let's get into my work and et cetera.
Okay, so as Cameron showed, you know, you're in the middle of something and your boss comes to you and says, I need you to work on something else pronto. But you've got breakpoints set, you've got files open, you've got watch windows, you've got all sorts of stuff. If I had multiple monitors to show you, I could have different tool windows on different screens. And so context switching can be very difficult.
So let me ask you something. In an 8-hour day, how many focused, if you're a developer, how much focused time do you have developing? Rough number. Four?
I see two over here.
Four? Two?
Three.
Yikes. So you're constantly getting interrupted, is that right? Constantly. And so this is one of the biggest things that we've got as we've gone and talked to a ton of feature focus groups, we've talked to you guys. You know, a common complaint is, hey, I just can't stay focused enough. My boss won't stay out of my office. You know, whatever it is, you keep getting interrupted. So we wanted to give you some capability here, and this is a major investment area for us to help solve that problem.
So you see I have these files open, I have some breakpoints. What I can do is just select that and click on suspend. It's now going to push everything up to a shelf set, which is, if you use Team Foundation Server, you know that this is now backing it up on the server. So if I lose this laptop, everything's now saved, not a problem. And now I'll jump over and I'll do something else here. Maybe I'll just add a comment, call it foo. Save that, close out some of these files.
You're going to check that in now?
Yeah, let's go ahead and check this in. You know, you were asking me to make this change. I know it's a high priority comment. Do you want me to leave? So now that we're done with that, Cameron's happy. I can now switch back to the real work, what I was working on earlier, just by saying resume. And now it's going to take this back off the server. It's going to rehydrate my breakpoints. It's going to reopen those files I had. It's pulling that shelf set and putting it back on my workspace.
That's great. That's really good. So, you know, again, get you back to where you were as quickly as possible and hopefully get you back into the zone. There's still that disconnect as you're kind of, you know, paging back in that information that you had in immediate memory. But I think this will help a lot. It'll also help if you do have multiple monitors, you know, we'll replace all the tool windows and things like that. So that this should really help a lot. One thing that I would like to point out here, and you jump to it for a second, if you can go to the home page there, This is what we're calling the hub. And one of the things that we're really focusing on in vNext is a focus on developer productivity. And part of that developer productivity is really getting down to what is it that you need to do now and try to take all the other information overload kind of situation out of the mix. So try to, you know, really focus on, you know, I'm going to do my work tasks. You get into the my work pane and you can start focusing on active tasks, past work that you need to do, etc. You jump into work items and you can take a broader look at work items maybe assigned to your team or etc. But you can just come to the home page right here in Visual Studio and look at this from like a hub kind of perspective. Does that make sense? And so from there, you go into my work and you can get into those sorts of things. So one of the things that I would like to introduce here, actually, you've got this my work. A lot of times you're coming in here and you need to fix a bug, you know, what have you, new feature, et cetera. A lot of times what you're trying to do is, as you're fixing your system, you're trying to make it better as you move through the code. So, you know, a common practice is refactoring. As we all know, make a change, try not to create, you know, duplicate code, et cetera, refactor the stuff, make the code clean. We've got this phenomenon in this industry where, you know, code just starts to go bad over time, starts to stink, right? It's kind of just entropies. And a lot of that is we're just not focused enough on, you know, cleanliness as we make changes. So one of the things that we wanted to do in vNext was give you the ability to detect where the most used code reuse mechanism in the world. Anybody have an idea of what that reuse mechanism is? Copy and paste. So yes, copy and paste. So one of the things that we wanted to do is, where else, give you a way to analyze your base, to understand how well you're utilizing that particular reuse mechanism as one thing. But more importantly, get in there and understand what sections of your code could potentially be refactored. It's beyond just a simple exact match, and we're going to get into that now. If you can show code clone.
I'd love to. So here's code clone. I'm going to run it against my entire solution, and what it's doing is it's looking for semantically similar or identical blocks of code. And you can see here that we have one match that came up. And if we take a look at the two of these, if I just flip back and forth, spot the difference, it's pretty much exactly the same. The only difference down here is the redirect. So this is a clear example where somebody took a block of code, they pasted it into another project, and they're reusing that. All they did is change one line of code. Perfect example where we'd want to refactor that.
Yep.
Another good example here, if I drill into my extranet project, let's search for that.
So he just showed you one common use. Like, where are some refactoring opportunities? What he's going to go show you right now is, a lot of times you get into a situation where you're fixing a bug, and you've got this nagging feeling that you've seen code very similar to this somewhere else in your system, but you don't know where, and you're not sure exactly how. So you can select a chunk of code and say, hey, can you analyze this and look for a similar piece of code throughout my system? Which is what he's doing now.
That's right. So I know I've seen this pattern before. It's shown up a few times as I've been doing my code reviews. And here you can see that I have some exact matches, some strong matches, and some medium matches. So we're using some really interesting technology from Microsoft Research here to run some semantic heuristics against this and try and find things that, even if the code isn't identical, it's at least similar enough that it's worth inspection. So here you can see I have some medium matches down here. If I open up a couple of these, you'll notice that even though they're similar, they're actually using different entities. So we have a customer repository and a service ticket repository. And so there's a couple of ways you might use this. One is, hey, I'm fixing a bug here. Where Yep. might I also look to fix this bug? Or another example is, hey, I know that I need to do something like delete and save this customer. What's the pattern that Cameron used the last time he did this? Is there any gotcha? Do I need to wrap this in a try-catch? And so I can search for that block elsewhere, and that can help inform the decisions I make.
That's great. Yep, that's great. And the thing is, this is not doing a, you know, a regular expression search or what have you. It's not looking for exact matches. It does bring in like the semantic understanding of the code itself. So in this case, it's understanding that you've got two different types, but the pattern looks the same. It goes all the way through all the parameters as well. You've got different, it'll detect a chunk of code that is similar, but you're passing different parameter values, let's say string values or what have you. That'll also hit. Okay?
That's right.
Okay. Is that an interesting feature? You think you'd use that one? Yeah? Okay. Excellent. That's excellent. Okay. Okay. Now, a lot of times when you're making these changes, right, you need to establish some unit tests and get some unit tests in place in order to make sure that you haven't broken anything too badly. You want to make sure you're testing everything that you're doing so that you can move forward and feel comfortable with those changes. We've done a lot in the unit testing space in vNext. So we've done basically what we have done is we have taken our unit testing frameworks and we've said we need to open this up and make this easier for folks to use other unit testing frameworks like NUnit, XUnit, MS Test, what have you, and just seamlessly integrate that into the product. Okay, anybody using unit testing tools? Yeah. Okay. We've got a lot of work that we've done here, and I'd love to show this at this point, Brian. That's great. Let's do it.
Absolutely. So when I ran a build here, it actually looked across my solution for not only MS test unit tests, but we have unit test adapters to support NUnit, XUnit. We'll have a new unit testing framework to support native code. So you can write your tests in native code, and you can run your tests against native code. And so it's really extensible. We can continue to expand on that over time. Peter Provost is here if you'd like to talk to him after the session. He's the guy in charge of the brains behind making all this happen. And what you can see here is that I've discovered a few tests within my project or within my solution. I can quickly run these tests. And it's just jitting the test engine right now. So the next time it's going to be much, much faster. We want to make sure that you can do your red-green refactor very, very quickly. Now you can see that this is running quickly at 600 milliseconds. And what you can see here is I have a few tests that passed, a few that failed. I can jump to this one, for example. And you can see that this is an NUnit test. We're using NUnit's built-in mocking framework, so that's really nice. We're able to take advantage of that right within the tool set. Here I have a test that's failing. If I open this one up, it's failing because I commented this out to actually break it so you would see what happens when we fail a test. Down here, you get a stack trace. So here you can see that I'm getting a null exception when we run this particular test, and this actually occurs in two places. So if I jump straight to that line within my application that's throwing the exception, you can now get a really quick sense of, okay, I run this test and now I get this exception. So here you can see that because we actually haven't mocked up this particular component, we can do that now just by commenting that out, and then that should make it
pass. So you just jumped right there from the stack trace. That's cool.
Absolutely. Yep. Yeah, so now I can just rebuild the solution, yep. Run it again, that should pass.
Mm-hmm.
There we go.
Excellent. So we've got the timings of each of the tests in there. We've got the summary pane that can pull up and jump in. That's great. So this experience that you're seeing will be the same experience for whatever framework that you decide to use. So we're going to have a C++ unit testing framework, NUnit, XUnit, whatever. The experience is all the same with the tooling.
That's right.
Okay. So with that, there's another. How many folks are using Team Foundation Server? Yeah? Have you tried searching for work items inside Visual Studio? Yeah, you've tried. Yeah. So I'd like to point out a search bar that's inside Visual Studio. Can you search for a work item for me?
I sure can. Let's search for Canadian. Do we have any Canadians out there? All right.
The only one.
So we had a bug related to Canadian customer addresses not showing up. I quickly searched for that. You can see I can even come in here and scope this. So I can say search for any Canadian customers, work item type equals bug. And I can scope this and quickly find what I'm looking for. So that's very, very cool.
Yeah. So any work item type, you can jump right inside Visual Studio. So that's a nice little bonus there. Okay, so you were working on this bug about Canadian addresses.
That's right. Yeah, so we've just expanded into new markets, and we need to make sure that we support our Canadian friends to the north.
Okay.
So I'm going to take this bug off your plate because you're clearly not getting it done.
Okay.
And so I'll switch back over to my work and just signal that I'm working on this guy. Drag it up to my work.
Okay.
Drop into my solution. And I think I've figured out the problem here. Our regular expression is actually it's not considerate of our Canadian addresses. So we just need to change this guy here. Well, and I think that's right, but yeah. I'd really love to have you take a look at this, Cameron. So now what I'd like to show you is our new code review tool. So if I switch over to Team Navigator, I can say request review. And I can ask Cameron, does this look right, eh? Is that right? And I can say who I want to work on this. We'll get Cameron. And I know Lori's a big hockey fan, so we'll have her take a look at that too. And we'll go ahead and submit that request. So now I've created a shelf set. I've pushed that up to Team Foundation server. And we're now taking advantage of the new built-in code review workflow so that now when Cameron switches over, he should be able to see this and give me some feedback.
Okay, great. So I'm going to walk in and I basically say, okay, I'm going to go to my work. And I'm going to look at there's an under review. And so what I'll just do there is I'll just double click on that. And at this point, I'll see, hey, here's the code review. I'll accept it because I'm going to actually do the review. So I'll accept this one. And at this point, I see a couple comments. Does this look right? Hey, if I start clicking around here, I can reply. I can say, yeah, sure, whatever. if I go down a little bit farther, I can see the actual address.cs file that he has changed. Now, a couple things to point out at this point. What you're seeing is a new diff mechanism in Visual Studio. And you'll see that it's an inline diff mechanism. And so you'll see here's the old code is in red. I hope everyone can see that. And the new code is yellow. Now I can switch and I can say, hey, I want to see this actually in side-by-side mode or keep it in line. Okay? And that's new in VNext. And I can come in and I can make comment level, I can comment on the file itself. And so, associate or attribute this file with a general comment, like, address, class looks good, something of that nature. But I can also go in and I can say, hey, you know what, this piece of the irregular expression is just clearly wrong. So I'm going to add a comment to that, and I'm going to say, I have no idea if this is cool or not. Okay? However, what I do know is, since we're trying to make this a little bit better, an international kind of code base, what I'm going to do is I'm going to select zip, and I can add a comment to that and say, hey, let's make this postal code. Okay? Like that. Now, what I want to do is I want to send all my comments. I'm essentially publishing my comments to the server. And I'm going to push that through, okay? And I'm done with my review. I've done it. One last thing I almost forgot. I wanted to point you out to this little thing. Notice this little tab up here? Everyone see that? This is what we call the provisional tab. And this is a new UI feature in Visual Studio VNext. And the idea behind this tab is to help you with the DockWell clutter that sometimes you get. When you're opening a lot of files, you'll end up with a lot of files open in the DockWell. The provisional tab is designed to always recycle. So if you're opening up a lot of files, like in this case, I'm opening up many files to review, it'll just show up in that provisional tab so that if I opened up, 20 files or what have you, I can easily just hit that one tab and they're all gone. So it just recycles there. A real common scenario where this is going to really, really make your life easier is the debug scenario. How many folks have been, stepping through code, and you're stepping through, and you're looking for a problem, and you come out the other side, and you've got, 100 files in your DockWell, right, that you then need to go close up. That is no longer a problem, because what will happen is you'll go step, and it'll go into the provisional tab. Now, if you do see a file that you want to pin and put into the DockWell, you can promote it. So you can click this little button here, which promotes that and puts it in the DockWell. Okay? So a couple real, again, I started talking about the provisional, the work hub as a way to just really focus on your work, and this is one of those nice little benefits here. So at that point, great, thank you. At that point now, I'm going to finish this review and hand it back to Brian so he can actually go make those changes.
Okay, thanks, Cameron. So now I'm going to switch back to my workstation here. And if I just refresh my work here, I can take a look at that code review. You can see that Cameron's reviewed it. Lori, sorry, you're too slow, so she's not gonna get a chance to review this one. So I like these changes. I can jump down here, same kind of thing. I can jump right into the file. It opens that up in my provisional tab well. I can see Cameron's comments. You know what, man? I looked at this regex. I know it's correct, so I'm gonna take that. We'll change zip to postal code in another release. We'll queue that up later.
That's
on.
Right.
So I'll go ahead and for now, we wanna make sure that we support these Canadian customers. And so we will check that in. That'll resolve my work item, and we're good to go.
That's great. Thanks, Brian. So what you see there, code review, built into Visual Studio, tightly coupled with the Team Foundation server on the back end, so you can share your files, share your change sets, et cetera, and do those reviews. You can do those pre-check-in or after check-in, however you'd like to do it, whatever works for you folks. So now, if we go back to the virtuous cycle here, we've spent a lot of time talking about feedback, actionable feedback, actionable data. What does that look like when you have a continuous feedback mechanism either with your team itself, which is highly valuable, but also with your stakeholders, folks who are paying you to make these changes, folks who are asking for whatever changes you've got coming. Having a tight, virtuous cycle with those folks to make sure you're building the right thing is also a key principle in what we've been doing in Visual Studio VNext. So what we've done is we've created a couple tools. One tool that we're going to show you today, which is the stakeholder feedback tool. And then in Brian's session later on this week, he's going to show the exploratory testing tool. But today, let's focus on the customer feedback tool, Brian.
All right. So we showed this momentarily in Jason's session, but I just wanted to show you this again because it really is nice for you to be able to get feedback from the stakeholders on your team that's not only timely, but it's also actionable. And as Cameron mentioned, being actionable means that you're not just getting a one-line description that says, hey, you need to go take a look at this thing, but it's also including things like screenshots and video recordings. So that's what the stakeholder feedback tool can do. You can include those screenshots, video recordings, audio annotations, so that as Jason or as our business analysts are going through and testing those incremental pieces of software we're delivering to them, we can get all that information we need to really understand the feedback as opposed to having to go back and forth over email all the time. So at this point, I'm going to just start collecting my feedback. From this point forward, anything that I do in terms of interacting with my applications is going to be captured as part of a log file. So if I now drop over to my application and I start interacting with it, as you saw Jason, he came in here and he said, this looks good. And then he did something like this where he took a screenshot. So it makes it really easy to include all this information in line. Is the Latin going to get changed? And so as I'm going in here, again, there's our bug. We'll go ahead and create that bug. And what you'll see here in a moment is that it already captured everything I was doing. So you can see here that I clicked the desktop, I clicked on the web page, I clicked on a particular ticket. That's where I encountered this particular piece of feedback. And then I captured the screenshot there, and I captured the custom control. And then once I capture that bug, I then get the option of saying change these steps and scoping that to the information that I think is actually really what caused the bug at that point. So now I can save this off, and as you saw Cameron do earlier, we can create a test case from that and make sure we capture that as part of our formal test plan moving forward so that we don't get embarrassed when our VP finds that issue.
Yeah. So a number of things going on here that I do want to drill into just a little bit. With the action recording, so we are recording all the clicks that are happening, and you see this actions log there that we've automatically linked into the bug or the feedback session here. We're also recording audio and video. And a lot of times, I do this with my team all the time at Microsoft, where I have one of my testers come in, and I'll be testing a piece of the code. I'm just going through it as a user would. And I'm sitting there just talking. Talking to my tester and saying, hey, I don't know, I don't like the way this feels. What about this thing here? And let's move this and let's make these changes. Let's make this bug gets recorded and that kind of thing. I call this feature my Matt Costner in a box feature, where you can turn on the audio recording and the video recording, and you can just have a conversation with yourself, essentially, and start going through the feedback, and it's just recording that audio and video. And then once you hit that submit, the save and close, it associates that with that essentially work item, pushes it into the Team Foundation server, And away you go.
And Matt Costner is your test lead.
Yes, so yes, that's, exactly.
Yeah.
And once, what happens then on the other side, the your product owner or what have you goes in there to Team Foundation Server, pulls that feedback out and starts to analyze that and starts to break that down into potentially new requests, right, that wants to send to the engineering team. It starts to break this thing down, and then the virtuous cycle starts to kick up again, where we have to go manage our backlog, manage our sprint, and so forth.
And we had a great story yesterday. Actually, Peter got a bug because we're using this internally now. And he got a bug from a tester that said, hey, if I go into one of the tool windows in Visual Studio and I grab it like this and I start going like this, then it eventually crashes Visual Studio. And that's great to have that video. I mean, imagine trying to type that up into a bug, right? I'm not sure how you would describe that exactly.
Well, so. And you'd get the, yeah, come on. No, that works fine.
Exactly.
Or
works
the,
on
the,
my machine.
Yeah, or the obvious, okay, don't do that.
Yeah.
You know, that happens. So at this point, what I'd like to do is we can bounce back out into the slides here and show kind of where we're at. This virtuous cycle, this constant flow of feedback, constant flow of this collaborative, agile kind of feedback going through the whole cycle is what we're really trying to emphasize here with you and showing you all the tooling that we've kind of put along this cycle as you go through this. We're just building on what we've been doing since 2005. And just making it just either better in some cases, like you saw the provisional tab, the diffing in inline diffing, et cetera, and then adding great new capabilities. If you can take us back to the deck there, that'd be great. So I want to make sure that we summarize this appropriately for you, and then we'll be able to take some questions. I believe we'll have enough time. This is the summary here, the actionable incident. We showed you that's the IntelliTrace in production. I really hope you take advantage of that because I think it's going to save you a lot of time. Managing the backlog, the storyboarding assistant that we built on top of product on top of PowerPoint is going to really help you have a high fidelity conversation with your stakeholders. Sprint planning. We showed you all kinds of sprint planning tooling that we're giving you, from the ability to see real-time velocity, burn down, and trending over time with your sprint backlogs. I think you're really going to enjoy that. All the way down into when you're writing the code. Sprint execution, the code reviews, the code clone analysis, the My Work and the Hub are going to be great additions to your workflow. Is my anticipation. And then, of course, the continuous stakeholder feedback, which Brian just finished showing you. Again, targeted at having a really rich, rich conversation with your stakeholders. So with that, I've got one call to action here. Because, you know, we're not ready to ship this yet. And so what I want you to do is, first of all, come up to speed on Visual Studio 2010, because a lot of the features that we're showing you here is just building on that base, of course. Renew up your MSDN subscription, because if you do, you'll get all these new bits when it's available. Download that System Center CTP that you saw in the keynote. That will connect that product back, the production level stuff, and get that back into your TFS backend and have a high bandwidth conversation there. Jason Zander has published the white paper that you can also get at the booth in the exhibit hall, but he's also put that on his blog, so check that out. And if you want to stay informed on the features that are coming in vNext, we're going to have a slow cascading rollout on these blogs, Jason Zander's blog, Brian Harry's, and my blog, Cameron Skinner. With that, I don't want you to miss a couple presentations. Terry Leeper from the Visual Studio C++ team is going to be giving a talk about ALM for C++ and talking about all of the ALM features that we're putting into the C++ side of the house to support native code in a much more fundamental way. And then Brian Keller is doing a manual testing talk about Visual Studio 2010, and he'll also, I think you're going to have a little time to show the exploratory
testing. I'll show the new exploratory testing experience that you'll get in the next version of MTM.
Okay,
yeah,
that's great. So with that, folks, I really appreciate you coming. Have a great tech ed, and at this point, we can take some questions if you would like. Thanks a lot.
Thanks.
Go ahead. There you go.
The stakeholder tool has the recording of actions. We've seen demos with web apps. Will that work with the WPF Silverlight app?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that'll work. It does depend on the type of application you're using. If you take a look at our support for test automation today in 2010, it's the same application matrix. So WPF, Windows Forms, web applications, whether you're using web applications that do JavaScript, it doesn't matter. That'll capture everything there. Yep.
Thanks for that. Go ahead.
Yeah, I had a quick question. You were showing a little bit about code review.
Yeah.
Part of our challenge is with respect to context. Is there some way of looking at code review and collaborating before you submit into the archive just the entire solution?
So you want the essentially all the conversation that's going on around the code review, or?
What I was looking for is not only just the file that was modified, but the entire solution so that I could look at the context of that change.
Okay, so it's part of the change set. So as you're making changes, right, you're going to see a change set associated with the files that you're changing.
With the file, I'd like to see the entire context of the entire solution.
Sure.
Is there a way of doing that?
The way TFS works, you can just unshelve that workspace into your local workspace in line with the rest of the solution. So yes, you could F5 that, run unit tests, any of that. Absolutely.
Okay, so how is that done? As the originator, you pull down the entire shelf of all the files, or related solution, or how would you do that?
It's the same way you work with shelf sets today. Maybe if you come see us in the booth, I can show you how that works.
Thanks.
Great question.
Is that working? Is there a mic down here?
Just try tapping.
Tap it.
Reboot.
There you go. That's on.
Hi. Yeah, I was just wondering if you guys are working on tools or best practices to help ease of adoption, because my team adopted TFS maybe about 8 months ago, and we kind of eased our way into it. So first for builds, then for source control, and then for work item tracking. And we've been this octopus spread across
sure.
multiple places, and we're coming home to TFS, and I'm wondering if you guys are working on kind of tools to help that, because going up like a greenfield solution, brand new project, I can see this being fantastic, but for brownfield existing legacy solutions.
Sure. So when you're moving, you're moving from something to TFS, and you're just looking for more guidance or specific tooling. Can you say a little more?
Yeah, I mean, well, if our bug system was fog bugs,
I see.
That mm-hmm. kind of thing, bringing that underneath TFS,
I see.
And
yeah.
was SVN now guiding that and just absorbing these other databases, basically.
Yeah, we have a Team Foundation server integration platform, which is meant to be extensible and is meant to help you push and pull data from all these different solutions.
Mm-hmm.
It does require sometimes that you write custom adapters, depending on which other third-party or custom solution you're working with.
Mm-hmm.
If you come see us in the booth, we can have a great conversation around your specific scenario. That's a great question.
Thank you.
I do know that they need to cut loose with the camera soon, so whenever you need to go, it's cool with us. We'll just keep taking questions.
Go ahead.
Hi there. Using the code metrics power tool you've put together.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just watching stuff in the keynote. It seemed like there's a great chance to have that integrated with sort of business intelligence for metrics.
Yes.
Is there anything coming, or do we have to build it ourselves for now?
Yes. you're absolutely right. I mean, you're talking about all those analytics. You can think of the code complexity over time kind of thing. Yep. We don't have anything coming right now.
We're just using reporting services at the moment.
Yeah.
We've kind of hacked something together with the XML files that the power tool creates.
Yes.
But rather than go too far down that path, if it's going to come, we may as well just get started.
I would say, we don't have anything coming in vNext around this particular feature set. It's something that we're definitely looking at. Trending information is something that we want to really start to take a heavy look at, but nothing coming for this.
Okay. And just relating to the code review stuff, would you get a sense of the coverage change required in your check-in? So you did the code review, look, you've changed this regex, but what about the test coverage that relates to that?
Sure. That's a great question. I don't know the answer to that, actually.
So is the question on your unit test how you get code coverage? Or?
No. So in your when you did your check-in review earlier, you had, okay, so here's my code change, but what's the associated test coverage change with that code change?
Yeah.
Oh, I want to
check in a whole
sure.
set of change.
That's a great suggestion. I don't know the answer to that. We should circle back and maybe hit the booth, and we'll circle back on that, because that's a great one.
Yep.
All right, thanks.
That's a great one. Back here.
Hi. in one of the code changes you were making, you made the change from zip to postal code.
Yeah.
Now, I noticed that you checked the code in. So when you check the code in, do you lose those comments for Rev 2?
No. So those comments are saved in the a change set, essentially. And so you actually, they're there as long as you don't go delete change sets, et cetera. Okay. So they do stay with the code.
Great. Thank you.
Yep.
Question, IntelliTrace, when would I be able to deploy to production and start capturing production issues?
When we ship the next.
Okay.
Yep.
And is the technology behind AV code, is it similar to IntelliTrace, or those are two separate?
It's two separate things. It's similar. It's using a similar mechanism, but there are two collection mechanisms.
Right.
It's something that we will be working on and making much tighter, have a great seamless integration there.
And what would be the roadmap for now? Just go with System Center, AV code, and then down the road look into IntelliTrace for more collection of data?
Exactly. So I would say, absolutely go grab the System Center stuff now, because the AV code stuff is a monitoring solution. It's always on, right? And so it's gathering different data than what we're able to gather with IntelliTrace, especially if you turn IntelliTrace to high. Mm-hmm. And so the idea is, keep the AVACODE stuff going, and you're going to find an issue that it just isn't giving you enough information, and that's when you turn IntelliTrace up, get that in production, get that trace back.
Appreciate it.
Yep.
I also had questions about the IntelliTrace stuff. Is there any kind of configuration to manage, the file size of the log file?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, it actually, you can set a file size, and then that's actually a rolling file size, so you can say, cap this at 2 gigs, and then it just keeps, yes.
Is it something designed that you could leave on, or is it you really kind of turn it on when you really need that detail?
Yeah, there's two settings to IntelliTrace. There's a low setting where it's gathering events, he showed you where you're getting ASP.NET GET events and things of this nature. And then there's a higher value setting where we're gathering call stack information and real deep parameter information. And that is, we're gathering a lot more information there. So it depends on what you're doing. But I would suggest that you basically, you get it in production. It's really designed to, you have a problem, you see it reproduce, turn on IntelliTrace even at high mode, take a little perf hit there while gathering that data, but get it to reproduce so you get this very rich file coming back. That's kind of how we go about it.
When you were doing your demo, when you first configure it and turn it on and turn the application on, you get that first time hit.
Yeah.
But what kind of hit do you get while it's running in high mode?
Yeah, so we're still trying to figure out what the number is. It's ranging, depending on your app and depending on how much load you're putting on it, we don't have an exact number, but you're going to definitely feel it. It's going to be certainly more than 10%, call it 10 to something. We're still in the middle of working this out, right? Still working on the perf. We want to make it as, we don't want to impact you as much as, or impact you as little as possible is the design goal, but we are gathering, especially if you turn that up to high, we are gathering deep information, and it's the tough information, it's the information that you would not able to get any other way. So
Right. There's
some give and take that you're going to have to play here.
All right, well, thank you. Excellent feature.
Thank you.
With the IntelliTrace in production, is there any way that you can use that for those issues that aren't easily reproducible, that are only intermittent and only happen to two users in one branch?
Yeah, so it's possible. It's possible, but it's one of those things that you'd want to leave that on, and it depends on the setting that you'd want to do. Like I was saying there, there's some give and take that you're going to have there, because there is there is going to have a perf hit if you turn that thing up way high to gather lots of information.
And depending on how much data you're gathering, are you going to take a perf hit every time the application starts up?
Only the first time it starts up as it rejits everything.
Okay. Yeah. And is that, we use a lot of terminal server farms where we'll have 100 users. Is each user going to take that hit?
No.
No.
Okay. It's just the managed code that's getting rewritten there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we switched from VSS to TFS for source control a couple of years ago.
Great.
Thank you.
And there's still some features that VSS has that were missing in TFS. I just wondered, are they ever going to be addressed?
What?
Sharing files is one. Having the file date on disk be the file date, the original file date, rather than the time that you got the file. I mean, you got some old ancient file there that hasn't changed. but it's got today's date because you just got it.
Sure.
Stuff like that.
Sure. I don't know the answer to that, but we can take those questions down and we watch their blogs.
Yeah, we do have a TFS booth with some experts from the product team. A few of those are actually design reasons, the reasons that we chose to go with the changes you mentioned as opposed to the old BSS style. Uh-huh. And I would suggest having a conversation with them to really understand the ins and outs and some of the problems people got into with the old SourceSafe style. So that's why we went with the TFS style. So we'd love to have that conversation offline. Yeah, thank you.
Go ahead.
With IntelliTrace in production, is it going to be possible for us to, say, blacklist certain variables and certain things or scrub a file, for example, when dealing with PII?
Mm-hmm.
Is there any way for us to scrub that file from production and now I increase the chance that the business will adopt this technology if they know they're not leaking PII
as
part of the trace?
Well, we don't have any specific features like that. The best thing we can do is if there are modules that you know has sensitive information, you can exclude those particular modules and not instrument them. But we don't have do a scrub of the file feature in there. So that would be one of the things that you'd have to have some IT folks would need to go and take a good look at that. But that's something we've definitely heard about.
Okay.
Thanks for that. Say again? So the question was, can you do that with attributes? And unfortunately, no, because we've only got the exclude at the module level right now. So
potentially in the future, sure.
Yeah it's definitely something we've heard and we'd like to do. It's just that's a big, long, slippery slope, So at this point, we'd say if you're worried about it, then take those logs and analyze those logs behind the firewall or whomever has access to that information, or just exclude those modules. There you go.
My question is related to IntelliTrace usage. How do you see it in the future as a replacement for custom logging or just to help in production debugging?
We would love it to replace logging in general because you don't have to go and change your code at all, right? Sorry?
Everybody hates custom logging.
Yeah, exactly, right? And we spend a lot of time manually instrumenting your code with these various logging tools. We're not there yet, but you can imagine that we could get there with this technology because it's essentially doing exactly that. It's instrumenting your code, putting entries and exits in these methods and at parameter levels, and we just need to get there.
Yes, but debugging production is good enough.
Yeah.
Reason to use it.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Any more questions? Okay.
All right.
Thanks all,
folks. Thank you.